Let us fly, girls, where, dear? To the sky, girls, oh, you flying machine, jump in, my Josephine, ship ahoy. Oh, joy, what a feeling, where, girls? In the ceiling, high, oh, oh, fly, we fly, in the sky, so high. Come, Josephine, in my flying machine,
hello, this is Maggie Britton. The program is The Pleasure's Ours, and this is the fourth and final episode in the life and adventures of aviator Pat Patterson. On October the 30th, 1936, the Shanghai Times headlined this story, and I quote, "Local celebrations of General Chiang's birthday. Skywriting of felicitous character attracts much attention." Well, as this is Pat Patterson's story, you must know that he was involved in another first in China. The character was Xiao, meaning long life. Pat had been approached by a group of people loyal to General Chiang Kai-shek to do something special for the general's 50th birthday celebrations, and Pat tells how he achieved the desired results.
My desire was to get to an altitude of 15,000 feet. Because that particular day, it was a clear, deep blue sky, but not a cloud in sight, and I assumed that the wind direction would be very, very slight. I took off from the Hangar Aerodrome, and I could only get about 13,000 feet because I had a full tank of fuel and a full tank of the chemical that used to make the smoke. So I decided I'd have to start and write the character, which I did. But in making the sharp turns that it was necessary to write that character, and being that the airplane was overloaded, it went into a spin. I'd kick it out in the spin and hope that I was lined up for the next line. And that happened twice. I had lost really hope that the character could be readable from the ground. But when I got back and landed on the airplane, on the airport, the mechanics came running out and saying, "Oh, you write Chinese, you write Chinese." And I looked up and it just looked like a big rubber stamp. It stamped the character in the air. You couldn't see the difference from the ground that it was on three different levels. So I packed up and decided I'd go back to the city, to my office. And in driving downtown, it was just unbelievable, the crowds that had come out on the street, and were all looking up and saying, "Ah, yeah, ah, yeah, ah, yeah." And it really had to push through the crowds of people and traffic all the way downtown. The newspaper people, of course, all called me. And the artist for the South China Morning Post, I think it is.
In this cartoon copy?
Yes.
North China Daily News
North
in
China
Shanghai.
Daily News.
Yes.
Came to see me and sketched me for a cartoon that he wanted to put in the paper. That evening, Madame Chang telephoned me and thanked me very much for the compliment, and asked me if I could do it again the next day in over Nanking. I agreed to do it, but unfortunately when I got up there, it was a rainy day, overcast and clouded, and so I had to turn back. But just about that time, two Italian pursuit airplanes came buzzing by me and waving their wings and then fired a few shots. I had to roll over on my back to show them that the airplane was a China National Aviation airplane, and they finally waved and left. But after that, in order to pay China National Aviation for the use of the airplane, I wrote, use Air Mail several times, and use CNAC several times over Shanghai.
This music was popular before the war in China. It wishes long life, good health, and happiness. The newspaper which ran a cartoon of Pat's birthday salute to General Chiang, the North China Daily News, published in Shanghai, using Sapozhu as their artist. His real name was Sapozhnikov. A Russian, he was regarded as the leading political cartoonist in the Far East prior to World War II.
That breathless charm, won't you please arrange it, 'cause I love you just the way you look tonight.
Just the Way You Look Tonight, sung by Ezio Pinza, was one of the hits of 1936 in the USA. I include it for that reason, and also because Pinza became a very good friend of Pat's a few years later when he was starring in the original Broadway production of South Pacific. But now, back to our story. Pat mentioned being fired on by two Italian pilots in Nanking. They were part of a group based in that area, which the Italian government had sent in as part of an effort to take over the Nationalist Air Force. Some very high-powered officers had tried to convince Madame Chiang, as chief of the Air Force, that they could do a better job than the Americans. They offered to build airfields and spend a lot of money supplying planes, and the Chiangs had no option but to give them some leeway. They allowed two squadrons of Italian Air Force fighters into China, one of which was headquartered in Nanking, the other in Tientsin. However, the start of World War II brought that association to a swift close. Unfortunately, General Chiang didn't see his birthday message in the sky. He was in Hankow at the time and had to be satisfied with photos of the event. Did you ever hear from him about it?
Yes, I met him several times, and he spoke only short sentences of greetings or salutations, things of that kind, so that I never heard him speak anything in a conversational way.
Mm. But could you form an opinion of what he was like?
No, I never saw him very much, not that much. Madam Chang was the chief of the Air Force. Her title was the Commissioner of Aviation Affairs. And so she was the actual chief of the Air Force, so that all of our contact concerning the Air Force was with her.
So you knew her better, and of course her English was virtually perfect.
Oh, yes. She was a graduate. She could be very hard. It was, in those days, it was extraterritorial, of course, and she had to remember that. But sometimes she'd go over that and didn't hesitate to tell you what she didn't like.
Do you think that the Generalissimo leaned on her pretty heavily?
Oh, yes, no question about it. I don't think that he ever made any decision without her, certainly not about the Air Force. And every once in a while she'd call a meeting, and we'd all attend, and those meetings is when her real temperature came out, because it was generally when something had happened that she didn't like, and she made no bones about telling us.
Madam Chiang Kai-shek was one of the three Sung sisters, each of whom made an outstanding marriage. Ai Ling married General Chiang's banker and finance minister, H. H. Kung. Ching Ling married Dr. Sun Yat-sen, and Mei Ling was Madam Chiang Kai-shek. Ai Ling is the only one of the three who does not rate a personal biography in Encyclopedia Britannica. It must be added that their brother, T.V. Sung, at one stage banker and minister to General Chiang, was once regarded as the richest man in China. It's all beginning to sound a little bit Hollywood, isn't it? And speaking of Tinseltown, the hit movie in 1936 was Pennies from Heaven. From the original soundtrack recording, this is Arthur Tracy with the title song.
Ago, a million years BC, the best things in life were absolutely free, but no one appreciated a sky that was always blue, and no one congratulated a moon that was always new. So it was planned that they would vanish now and then, and you must pay before you get them back again. That's what songs were made for, and you shouldn't be afraid for. Every time it rains, it rains. Pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You will find your fortune falling all over town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down. Trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. So when you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you and me.
Thank you.
when you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you.
One of Pat Patterson's stories concerns a character named American Lee, who was born in Chicago of Chinese parents. He became interested in Chinese events, so much so that he came across to China and enlisted in the Nationalist Army, rising to the post of commandant of the military airport in Shanghai. American Lee was there at the start of the Sino-Japanese War, when the Japanese forces tried to take over the airport, but Lee and his small party successfully resisted the attack. However, the following night, the enemy returned and American Lee was killed. Pat had developed a good friendship with Lee through their working together. Pat imported the planes, then unpacked and test flew them with American Lee. The night of the second Japanese attack, it was bitterly cold, and students from the medical school in Shanghai wanted to go out to the airport to find Lee and any others who might have been killed or hurt. They found American Lee.
We found him all right. He was in full uniform, and of course the body had frozen, but the dogs had cleaned all the flesh off his skull. They took him into the medical university and kept his body there for several months, and finally appeared at my office one day with a box, and in the box was a skull, and they said, "There's your friend, American Lee." He said, "We thought maybe you might like to like him." I said, "Leave it there." So I still have it.
And I can vouch for that. Lee's skull is in a showcase in the sitting room of Pat's apartment, and most every visitor is ritually introduced to him. There's also a very graphic photograph on the study wall, which was featured in Life magazine at the time. Something that Pat had not planned.
We had no means in those days of getting film for our cameras. So the newspaper representatives who were there made a deal with us and said, "Look, you give us your developed film and we'll give you new film." That's the only way we could get the film. And that particular role that I gave this one newspaper man had that picture, had that frame in it, and the picture itself was in the full body. But somehow they made a deal with Life magazine, and Life magazine printed just the head and used it as the basis of a clown's makeup face.
In another reminiscence, Pat Patterson recalls his days as a stunt pilot in the early days of movie making, which was a far cry from the safety standards required today.
In those days, there were no such thing as faking. They wanted to crash while you purposely crashed. One job I did was they wanted an airplane to fly in between two buildings that were too narrow and wipe the wings off. Which we did. I padded had about 20 pillows all padded in the cockpit, and everything that was sharp was all covered with cloth and whatnot. And I got away with it. The only thing that, of course, you cut the engine switch so you wouldn't catch fire. But sometimes some of the boys who even cut the switch in crashes like that did catch fire, but it would be some carbon would still be ignited. But I was lucky enough to get away with most of all of them.
But were you paid very much for doing those stunts? They were
not very
risky.
Not very much. anything we made then was a fortune.
But that small fortune didn't feed him very well, so he continued to teach flying. And one of his most gifted students was Jack Fry, who worked in a grocery store and paid his tuition with groceries. Jack Fry was later to become president of TWA.
I talk to your photograph each day. You should hear the lovely things I say. But I thought how happy I would be if your photograph could talk to me. If I had a talking picture of you, I would run it every time I felt blue. I would sit there in the gloom of my lonely little room and applaud each time you whispered, I love you, love you. On the screen, the moment you came in view, we would talk the whole thing over, we two. I would give 10 shows a day and a midnight matinee if I had a talking picture of you. If I had a talking picture of you, I would run it every time I felt blue. I would sit there in the gloom of my lonely little room and applaud each time you whispered, I love you, love you. On the screen, the moment you came in view, we would talk the whole thing over, we two. I would give 10 shows a day and a midnight matinee if I had a talking picture of you.
Belle Baker, recorded in 1929, that big year for talking pictures and the Wall Street crash. But let's return to 1937 and the fall of Shanghai to the Japanese. Pat made his escape and planned to reach Hankow. As the Yangtze River was blocked up in many places, he made his way overland to a place on the river where he could pick up a Shell Oil riverboat or a sampan. He was taking the long way round through Anqing and Nanking. In Anqing, there was a fine small museum, and the curator offered Pat any artifacts he wanted, as he didn't want the Japanese to have them. Pat chose a couple of pieces, which are still in his possession. On reaching Nanking, Pat found a hotel which was totally devoid of people. He put himself up for a few days and joined forces with some others who were collecting food for the hospital, which the Japanese commander had promised not to bomb. After a few hectic days racing around after rice and other stores, Pat was lying on his bed wondering when he'd be able to get out of Nanking. His mind was made up for him when a 75mm shell whizzed in through one wall of his room and out through another to explode at a relatively safe distance. He made his way to the city gate, which had been blocked with sandbags, leaving only a small doorway, through which a crowd of about 10,000 people were trying to push themselves. Pat gave up before he started, and climbing the walls of the city, found some rope and lowered himself over, then headed for the river where the U.S. gunboat, the Panay, was anchored alongside 2 Standard Oil tankers. After handing over what he referred to as a small fortune to a fisherman in a sampan to take him to the Panay, the man refused because of the bombing. Pat took a length of fishing line from the boat and told the boatman to go as far down the river as the line would allow and to wait there for him. There was no room on board the Panay for him, but a good friend was on one of the tankers and they discussed the possibility of getting to Hankow. Rail travel was certainly out. They looked up to see two Japanese dive bombers heading straight for them. They jumped into the river and watched as the bombers scored a direct hit on the Panay and the oil tankers, all of which sank in about 2 minutes. Pat and his friend found the sampan, which took them to the other side of the river, and they walked across a peninsula to meet the river on the other side. At the site of a little river town, they found an old Chinese gunboat hidden in river reeds and trees. The captain was in the town, and they asked him to take them to Hankow, which he, of course, refused to do in fear of the bombing. Pat persuaded him to return to the boat with them, and after a search, they found a very large Union Jack in one of the drawers. Pat convinced the captain if he flew the flag, the Japanese wouldn't bomb him. After 3 or 4 days of very hard work, they got the rusty old engine going and built up a head of steam. The old gunboat set up off the river, steam blowing out of every pipe and leak, making it a long, slow journey. They arrived in Hankow 1 week later, dirty, bearded and disheveled. Close by the dock was the U.S. consulate. And when the unsightly travellers walked in, the Marine guard wouldn't believe it. He told them they were dead. They had had a narrow escape. Over 80 people were lost when the Panay and the oil tankers went down. At around the same time, in Hollywood, Alice Faye had a hit song with lyrics that were hardly applicable to Pat Patterson.
Wake up and live, don't mind the rainy patter, and you will find it's mind over matter. Dark clouds will break up if you will wake up and live. Wake up and live. Show the stuff you're made of. Just follow through. What are you afraid of? You'll try it, won't you? Say, why don't you wake up and live? Come out of your shell. Hey, fella, find your place in the sun. Come out of your shell. Say, fella, just be a go-getting son of a gun. Oh, wake up and live. If Lady Luck is yawning up on your toes, a better day is dawning. Don't let up, get up and give. Give yourself a shake up and wake up and live. And you will find it's mind over matter. Dark clouds will break up if you will wake up and see that it high. Wake up and live. Show the stuff you're made of. Just follow through. What are you afraid of? You'll try it, won't you? Say, why don't you wake up and live? Wake up and live. Come out of your shell. Hey, fella, find your place in the sun. come out of your shell. Say, fella, just be a go-getting son of a gun. Whoa, wake up and live. If Lady Luck is yawning up on your toes, a better day is dawning. Don't let up, get up, and yeah, you gotta give yourself a shake up. Yeah, you gotta wake up. Wake up and live.
In 1934, Pat had been appointed by the Americans as Civil Aeronautics Director for the Far East, but he had to remind them that he was a Canadian, not American. Wheels turned, and the State Department issued Pat with a U.S. passport. Many of the American pilots flying for CNAC had let their licenses expire. The renewal testing was one of Pat's jobs, as the Chinese did not have a licensing setup.
The chief pilot of the CNAC, an American, who was an ex-Pan American captain, they had to go to the doctor first to get their eyes examined. And the eye doctor called me and said, this fellow's blind. You can't give him a license. I said, what do you mean blind? He said, well, his eyes are beyond all the waivers that are legal. So I advised Washington, and of course Pan American immediately jumped into it, and the doctor was told to give him the waivers no matter whether they were legal or not, so he could see. When the doctor told me that he had done that, why, then I was to give him a license. But I was also told that I had to make a preliminary trip with him to see if it was all right. So I wanted to come down to Hong Kong anyway, and so I decided to take one of his flights. And in those days, we were using as S-38 Sikorsky, or amphibians. There was only a pilot, co-pilot, and a radio operator out in the front end. There was no other seat, so I stood up behind him in the control cabin. And they landed at Swatow and Amoy and so forth. Everything went fine. No problem at all. But coming into the harbor in Hong Kong, there was the blackest line squall I ever saw. It was very low. And he kept heading right into it. And I said to him, for the comfort of your passengers, don't you think it'd be well to go around the end? He said, I'm captain. Okay. So he kept going, dropping lower and lower, until we hit the squall about 200 feet over the water, and the next thing you know, I knew we were in the water. Because the weight of that line squall and the weight of the water. Fortunately, we hit flat, almost like we were going into land. But the nose of the 38 broke off, so threw us all in the water. Well, the pilot and the co-pilot, myself, could swim, but the radio operator couldn't. He was the only one that lost his life down. The passengers all got out. There were enough fishing junks around to pick them all up. Some of them had their ankles broken because they had their feet underneath the seat ahead, and the sudden stop broke their ankles. But outside of that, we got away with it. And the newspapers here had big headlines, the first air crash in Hong Kong.
And there are no prizes for guessing whether after that historic first plane crash in Hong Kong, the pilot had his license renewed. If he did, Pat Patterson certainly didn't give it to him. As war progressed in the area, up to the outbreak of World War II, Pat had to be very careful not to be caught by the Japanese, as he was listed as a munitions salesman and would have been jailed immediately, or worse, had he been caught. Pat took the last Pan Am Clipper out of Hong Kong. During World War II, Pat ran an aircraft manufacturing plant in New Haven, Connecticut, and returned to the East 6 months after war's end. His former business in Hong Kong and Shanghai was non-existent, and he had very little money, but he was willing to try other things. Firstly, the Chinese Air Force approached him for help with their fuel supplies and offered Pat 10% of any deal, which would have been good. He bought the fuel in California, hired the tanker, and had it shipped to Shanghai. only to face the vast problem of storage space for the oil. There was none available. A rather reluctant knight came to the rescue once again.
Fortunately, my good friend, the manager of the Texas company, finally, after about 3 days, called me with his office and said, "Look, Pat, I'll make a deal with you. You stay out of my business and I'll stay out of yours. I'll take the tanker." And that's what happened. That saved us. Well, we had been in poorhouse. We hadn't done that.
So what did you do after that? You had to keep body and soul together somehow.
Well, the next bad decision we made was they hadn't any whiskey in Shanghai at the time. So we bought thousands of cases of whiskey.
Good whiskey?
Yes, good whiskey, but unfortunately there were a dozen other wealthy Chinese who had the same idea. So we almost wound up drinking our own whiskey.
People are queer, they're always crawling, scrambling and rushing about. Why don't they stop someday? Address themselves this way. Why are we here? Where are we going? It's time that we found out. We're not here to stay. We're on a short holiday. Life is just a bowl of cherries. Don't make it serious. Life's too mysterious. You work, you save, you worry so. But you can't take your dough when you go, go, go. So keep repeating it's the berries. The strongest oak must fall.
Must fall.
The best things in life to you were just lost. So tell me, how can you ever lose what you never own? Life is just a bowl of cherries. So live and laugh at it all. Laugh at it all.
Pat finally left the Shanghai end of his business in 1947 to live full-time in Hong Kong, continuing to represent various aircraft manufacturers. He was also involved in a short-lived venture a few years ago at the request of the then governor of Macau. The governor wanted an air service between Hong Kong and Macau, but this time to carry passengers. Previously, there had been a small hydroplane service, but that was only for carrying gold when it was legal to do so. However, through many changes of mind and politics on all sides, it's obvious that this didn't eventuate. Pat was instrumental in getting British Airways helicopter services interested in the latest proposal, which has also become a non-starter. After many adventurous years in the East, Pat Patterson has no longings to return to his hometown, Ottawa. He hasn't been there since 1918, and the thought of living in the extreme cold doesn't appeal to him. At 84, Pat Patterson is still actively involved in business. He's just returned from visiting the Farnborough Air Show in England, and in early December, heads for the Beijing Air Show.
People ask me why I don't retire, and my answer is, if I retire, that's the end of it. Mm. I have to keep working, and I like to work.
The things that have happened to you in life, just by chance, and you've gone on taking chances, I guess it comes down to the inevitable question that if you had it to do over again, do you think you'd just let it continue the same way?
The same way. No regrets at all. Never. And I really don't think of the past. This is the first time that I have gone over my past. I don't think of it normally. I'm always looking ahead.
You say you don't think about your age. You keep young. And obviously you do, because you have a very lovely, very young wife.
Well, thank you. And she is of the age that keeps me young. She is of the age that inspires continuation.
Hooray for love.
Oh, say, let us fly, girl, where, dear? To ahoy! Oh, joy, what a feeling! Where, girl? In the ceiling, high, ho! Oh, fly, we fly in the sky, so high! Comes all the feeling in my flying machine, going up, she goes, up, she goes. Balance yourself like a bird on a beam. In the air she goes, where, there she goes. Up, up, a little bit higher. Oh, look, the moon is on fire. Comes all the steam in my flying machine. Going up, going up, goodbye. One, two, three, now we're off, girl. How's this? Pretty soft, girl. Whoa, dear, don't hit the moon. No, girl, not yet, but soon. This for me. Oh, my, you're a shy queen. Not I. I'm a sky queen. Oh, I'm up in the air about this for a fair. Come, Josephine, in my flying machine. Going up, she goes. Balance yourself like a bird on a beam. In the air she goes, where, there she goes. Up, up, a little bit higher. Oh, look, the moon is on fire. Comes all the feeling in my flying machine. Going up, going up, goodbye. Comes all the feeling in my flying machine. Going up, she goes, she goes. Balance yourself like a bird on a beam. In the air she goes, where, there she goes. Up, up, a little bit higher. Oh, look, the moon is on fire. Comes all the scene in my flying machine. Going up, going up, goodbye.